Atheist Nomads, episode 297. When you've got Vikings, you've got schisms.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin, and joining me is Lauren.
Hello.
Yeah, so...
There's no dog on my lap. There's no baby in my lap.
Yeah.
We're taking advantage of the 15 minutes that we got free.
Yep, and no Erin, because she's got a bad headache today.
Which I totally, yeah. It's been so sunny out, and allergy season is full on. So anybody who's sensitive is either having headaches, sinus problems, but she gets to miss out on an episode where you get to say, schism!
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I'm also getting to process through the death of the final aunt on the Williams side.
Yeah.
So that generation is done. I think she saw me when I was a baby, so I don't remember ever meeting her. Basically, I had no contact with that side of the family, but still.
Sobering thought.
Yeah, and I'm down to like two cousins on that side.
Do you think they call it sobering because you get drunk when you are processing it?
It's you process it when you aren't drunk.
Wait, that's
drunk.
The opposite.
Right. So you get drunk to stop processing it.
Oh, sobering things. You gotta nix it with some alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, cheers.
So yeah.
Cheers to Aunt Peggy.
Yep. Yeah. So for that side of the family, I think I've still got two cousins, plus my brothers and sister and me. And yeah.
You're the youngest.
I am the youngest.
By a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So that side of the Williams shall live on for quite a while. And then there's little Kylie to carry it on.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. She's also the youngest of her generation.
So far.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty much done. All right. Moving on, though.
Yeah. So we might as well just move right on into dusting off the degree.
Yeah.
Got an email from Celia asking a question for a future dusting off the degree. And now it's time to go ahead and get started with that. What she wrote was, "Hi, Dustin. I'm kind of curious about the Russian Orthodox Church and what they believe in, how they came to be, and how they're different from mainstream Catholicism and Protestantism. How much do you know about the Russian Orthodox Church? Can you talk about that on the Dustin Off the Degree segment for a future Atheist Nomads episode?" Actually, I know a bit about the Russian Orthodox Church. I did a paper on them senior year of high school and visited one of their services at the Russian Orthodox Church in Rogue River, Oregon. Which is kind of a, not quite where you'd expect to find one. But as it turns out, with everything related to religion, this is actually a really complex and big topic. And there's some background information we need to cover before we really get into that question. So first, we need to clarify terminology. If you use the colloquial terms, there are really four main branches of Christianity. There's the Oriental Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox, Roman Catholic, and Protestant. Often the Eastern Orthodox churches are just referred to as Orthodox, and the Roman Catholic Church is often just referred to as Catholic. And at least in America, basically nobody talks about the Oriental Orthodox churches. We'll get to those last later. But technically speaking, the Catholic and Orthodox churches are all Catholic, and they are also all Orthodox. Catholic means universal, and Orthodox means correct doctrine. They all view themselves as the church founded by Christ with the Great Commission, and that their bishops are the successors of the apostles. They also believe they have the right doctrine. So the Greek Orthodox Church is Catholic and Orthodox. The Roman Catholic Church is Catholic and Orthodox. If you want to be very specific and you want to make sure you're using the terms correctly, don't just talk about Orthodox. Refer to Eastern Orthodox if you're being very general about the Eastern Orthodox churches, or Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, and the like if you're wanting to be very specific about a particular Orthodox denomination. And when referring to Catholic, it's best to refer to Roman Catholic, because there are other churches that consider themselves Catholic, including the Orthodox churches. Now, Protestants are the newest branch out of the four. They split off from the Roman Catholic Church during the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century in Central and Western Europe. The Protestants believe that Christians are saved by faith, not works, that the priesthood belongs to all believers, with all Christians having direct access to Christ, and that the Bible is the only source for doctrine. Catholics, on the other hand, believe that your works will determine how quickly you get into heaven, in other words, how much time you'll spend in purgatory, that priests are a special class of believers, and that only the Pope has direct access to Christ, and that church tradition determines dogma. Not doctrine, dogma. What this created was groups of Christians in the West that were not in communion with the Bishop of Rome, who is commonly referred to as the Holy Father, Papa, or Pope. The Christians that remained in communion with the Bishop of Rome remained part of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, for the split between the Roman Catholic Church and the Eastern Orthodox Church, we have to go back to the Roman Emperor Constantine. He converted to Christianity, made Christianity the official religion of the empire, and moved his capital from Rome to Byzantium, renaming it Constantinople. This disrupted the power dynamics, not just in the empire, but in the church, by making Rome less significant and moving the seat of government to the Greek side of the empire, where there were far more Christians, instead of the Latin side of the empire. When the empire split east to west, there was one patriarch, the Bishop of Rome, who was over the church in the Western Roman Empire, with the remaining patriarchs left in charge of their provinces of the church in the Eastern Roman Empire. The Western Empire and the church in it spoke Latin and conducted Mass in Latin, while the Eastern Empire and the church in it spoke Greek. By the time the Western Empire collapsed, the Bishop of Rome had already started to fill in the power vacuum that this collapse created, and quickly worked to create relations with the German kingdoms that were taking over the lands of the former empire. Rome then sent missionaries out to convert the Germans, and what this ended up creating was basically a diplomatic back channel throughout the region. So that way, oh, and also, cleric and clerk have the same root, because priests often served as the clerk in the royal courts. They were the only literate people around. Latin was the common language for all of Western and Central Europe, so even in these German kingdoms, you would have a Latin proficient literate priest in the court who could send diplomatic channels, messages, to other courts to his fellow priests. In the West, they also started to gather land, the church did, and ended up basically creating a second government that existed throughout the entire, through all of Western and Central Europe, that was separate from the civil governments. When Charlemagne completed his conquest, he did it under the name of the Holy Roman Empire, and he established his capital in Rome, at which point the Pope snuck up behind him and snatched the crown and put it on his head, crowning him emperor. That helped set a different power dynamic where king was below Pope. And during this entire time period in the East, the Roman Empire lived on from its capital in Constantinople, and the Greek-speaking church continued as it had been existing, safe and secure under the protection of the empire, Pax Romana, the Peace of Rome, and to a certain extent under the control of the emperor. Over the centuries, more and more differences developed between Rome and Constantinople. They couldn't agree on whether the Eucharist or communion wafers, as Protestants call them, should be leavened or unleavened. The Latins preferred unleavened, while the Greeks preferred leavened. They couldn't agree on whether the Holy Spirit proceeded from just God the Father or from both the Father and Son. But really, the clincher was that the Bishop of Rome thought he should be the supreme and universal head of the church as the successor of Peter, while the Patriarch of Constantinople was willing to accept the Bishop of Rome as the first among equals. Also, Vikings. Yeah, when you look at anything in that time period happening in European history, Vikings are always a factor. So let's talk about them. A band of Vikings invaded France, married French women, and entered into a deal with the King of West Francia. According to this deal, they would convert to Christianity, keep their lands in France, accept the fealty to the Frankish king, and stop taking French land. These Vikings became known as Normans because they were men from the north, the Northmen. Their children, being raised by their French mothers, spoke French, or at least a dialect of vulgar Latin that would become French. And these are the same Normans that conquered England, based on what was quite possibly a very valid claim to the throne of England under Dane law. Because England was under the control of Vikings. They continued to be under the control of Vikings. At the end of the 10th century, the Pope and the Byzantine Emperor hired Norman mercenaries to try to stop the Muslim Emirate of Sicily from invading southern Italy. The Normans were successful and decided to go ahead and keep the land. After conquering Sicily, they moved on to the rest of southern Italy, including territory controlled by the Byzantine Empire and some of the Pope's client kingdoms. Eventually, the Pope gave his blessing on the Norman Kingdom of Sicily as long as they didn't take the Papal States in central Italy. And he also got them to give the Greek churches in Italy a choice: conform to the Latin Mass or shut down. In response, the Patriarch of Constantinople gave the Latin churches in the Byzantine Empire an equivalent choice. The Patriarch then adopted the title of Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople and sent a letter to Rome to that effect. The Emperor also sent a letter to request a joint military campaign against the Normans. And the Patriarch had also been pretty vocally in supporting people who were very vocally criticizing the Latin Church for using unleavened bread like the Jews. Pope Leo IX sent Cardinal Humbert to Constantinople to reject the Patriarch's new title and demand that he recognizes the Pope's supremacy. The Patriarch refused, so Humbert excommunicated him. The Patriarch then returned the favor with his own excommunications of everybody in Humbert's delegation. This was the big formal schism between the Eastern and Western churches, and things continued to get worse with the Crusades, as Latin Christian armies set up Latin kingdoms and their own Latin bishops of Antioch and Jerusalem and their own Latin patriarchs in those cities. It got even worse when Western Christian armies in the Crusades sacked Byzantine cities and Constantinople itself, effectively destroying the Byzantine Empire. Now, as far as the modern day differences go, there are doctrinal differences, like we already discussed, but to a large extent, the Eastern Orthodox churches have never faced a Reformation. So they've continued to evolve at a normal pace for 2,000 years. While the Catholic Church did face a Reformation, which it responded to with a Counter-Reformation that created almost as many changes as the Protestant Reformation did. And they also went through another major modernizing campaign in the 1960s, replacing the Latin Mass with Mass in the local language, among other things. Other differences include Catholic priests having to be celibate, while Orthodox priests are allowed to marry, while bishops have to be celibate or widowed. Catholic priests must be clean-shaven, while Orthodox priests have to have beards. Catholic churches have pews with a sit-stand-kneel routine, while Orthodox churches do not have pews, so it's just a stand-kneel routine. The Orthodox Church is also a bit more mystical. But when it really comes down to it, doctrinally and even how the service goes, the difference between Catholic and Orthodox is far less than the difference between, say, Catholic and Methodist. But we'll get more into some of that as we continue this series. And next week, we'll go more in depth into the Eastern Orthodox churches, including where the Russian Orthodox Church came from. That one, though, is a story that also includes Vikings, also Mongols. Now, it's time for the news. All right, to start off with the news, we're going to go with
Catholics.
Catholics are back again. I don't want to keep talking about the Catholic Church and all of their sex abuse stuff, but they keep on fucking everything up. Including children and nuns.
As much as they're trying to hide this stuff and like sweep it under the rug, they're doing a really good job of doing the exact opposite.
Yep.
Way to be in the news again, guys.
Oh, yeah. So, Pope Francis issued an edict that requires that all Vatican personnel report any and all sexual abuse allegations they become aware of to the authorities.
Wait. That sounds awesome.
It does.
That sounds amazing.
Those who fail to do so will face fines or jail time.
Oh.
And while all the headlines and a cursory look at this seems like a step in the right direction,
womp, womp.
The devil's in the details. This edict only applies to the Roman
the Pope
Curia.
Is in the details.
This only applies to the Roman Curia and the Vatican City.
So what's the rushing? Sorry, what? What's the Curia?
Roman Curia.
Roman Curia. Why did I say Russian? Roman Curia are just the workers.
The Catholic Church is basically still a feudal organization. So the Roman Curia would basically be the Pope's court.
Oh, okay.
This includes all of his ambassadors. This includes all of the officials that work in the Vatican.
So kind of the city government of the Vatican City?
Well, it's a feudal system.
Yeah.
So kind of like the top. Most layer.
Well, that's good, though, if they're being held to a higher standard.
So, but it only applies to headquarters officials and ambassadors out in the various countries that have Vatican ambassadors.
So nobody who's actually on the ground?
Correct. No bishops.
No bishops.
No priests.
Well, I bet they're all
relieved.
Relieved.
And the authorities that they have to report stuff to are the Vatican prosecutors, not local authorities where the crime took place.
Okay, so Bishop fiddles a kid in Ireland, nothing happens.
Right.
If one of the head people of the Vatican hears about the Irish guy fiddling people and does not report it, he can get in trouble.
He can get fined.
Fined. But that's it.
If he reports it to the Vatican police...
Not the Irish police.
Right, Vatican police. The Swiss Guard.
Yeah, okay. Wait, the Swiss Guard is Vatican police?
Uh-huh.
Why is it Swiss? Why is this so complicated?
History.
Fuck history. Why do you have to make things so interesting? Anyway.
So, if it gets reported to the Swiss Guard and the Swiss Guard doesn't do anything about it, then that person can go to jail for 6 months.
Okay. But this still, so this is a nice, neat way of still keeping it in the family.
It keeps everything in the family, and the Vatican can say, yes, we are requiring that Catholic Church officials report it to authorities.
Their own authorities.
The not, highest level.
Not
the,
even Italian or Roman authorities.
Correct.
Just, well... It made for a really cushy headline.
Mm-hmm.
Like our reactions were like, what? This is awesome.
Right. Because neither of us read the last paragraph in the article.
It is all in the last paragraph of the articles. And so don't be swayed by this one good headline. They are still just being insidious.
It's basically the same thing as every glowing headline about Pope Francis. The headline
but he
is
traded his gold throne for a wooden one.
Headline
he
number
still has the gold throne, guys.
The headline is amazing. Most of the article is glowing about how this is amazing reform. This is huge steps forward. And by the time you get down to the bottom,
nothing,
you basically find out
changed.
It didn't change anything. This is exactly like that. Nothing has changed.
All right. Well,
what this makes interesting is, will this make it more likely that, using your Irish example, if it gets reported to an Irish bishop that one of his priests is diddling children, will this make him more or less likely to report it up to the Vatican?
This will absolutely make it 100% less likely. Because if he gets his boss in trouble, guess who's going to have to, clean it up? Yeah. he's going to do what they've always done and hide it and try to move the priest around or something along those lines. There's absolutely no good reason for a bishop to put his head on the line.
Actually, there is one.
Yeah.
So bishop goes out, reports it to the Vatican. The Vatican puts it to Vatican prosecutors. The Vatican prosecutors call the priest up and order him to come to Rome, to the Vatican, and local authorities can never touch it.
Yeah.
If this gets reported, it's a way to keep ahead of local authorities.
That's true. That's what they've been doing all these years, though.
Except
that's still no change.
They haven't been prosecuting it.
No.
Very often.
No,
this will increase the chance that they will prosecute it, but still, it will almost guarantee that any and all priests, as soon as allegations are made, either it gets brushed under the rug, and if it's starting to look like they won't be able to get it brushed under the rug, it gets reported up to the Vatican, the priest gets pulled into the Vatican, and will never face justice.
Yeah. So no win on all sides.
No matter how you look at this, either things will be less likely to be reported or more likely to get more effectively covered up.
Yeah.
This is bad. As people were saying about the recommendations for how to address this that the Vatican was looking at, this is resetting everything back to 20 years ago.
Yeah, pretending the last 20 years that hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
Not learning from mistakes, but ignoring them.
Yeah.
All right. Way to go.
All right. Fuck you. Fuck you, Pope Francis.
Fuck the Pope. You have to tear the picture. That was my picture. That was Sinead O'Connor tearing the picture of the Pope.
Mm.
Sound effect. It's good to get back into the sound effect game.
Okay. We aren't done with the Vatican. The founder and every single woman serving on the board and staff of Women's Church World, the Vatican's only women's magazine, have resigned in protest over the repeated censorship of their attempts to cover the sexual abuse of nuns and the appointment of a man to oversee their work to make that censorship easier.
Gah. I don't know how people can still be Catholic. How can you stand for this? Even the people there aren't standing for this. They resigned.
Uh-huh.
They quit. Good for them. I mean, it sucks that they're kind of out of a job, but oh my gosh, there's no reason why that should have happened.
And this is a Catholic women's magazine run by nuns, formerly now run by nuns. Of course, they were wanting to cover the stories of nuns reporting the way priests have raped them. This is something that the Pope has recently acknowledged is a problem that needs to be addressed. This is something that has started coming to light as a serious problem. They wanted to make sure the church knew about it. And
the church is like, oh, we already know about it, and you're not allowed to talk about it. So
every single article about it they wrote got nixed by a bishop.
Yeah.
When a man tells a woman that she can't talk about the way men are mistreating women in a publication for women, you have a serious, serious problem.
Yes. Not, let's just generally widen that, where if a man is telling a woman how to talk about sexual abuse, period.
Yeah.
Check your privilege. No, that's just insane. That's just a big old middle finger to
this is the 21st century.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I can't imagine so many women who go to, so many women choose to become nuns because there's a particular ideal in being a nun, in being that servant to the church, and to be treated like they were treated and then denied. I have expect freaking monasteries all over the freaking country or all over the
convents
to just like go up in flames. It was like, fuck you guys.
Doyle Kelly did the invocation for the Georgia House of Representatives last week, and not only went sectarian, he went full fire and brimstone.
Oh, God, this guy. This was Georgia?
This is Georgia.
Yeah.
He is the father of a member of the Georgia House of Representatives.
Oh, hey, Dad, you want to do the invocation?
Uh-huh. He's also a high school football coach.
I'm willing to bet he's one of those football coaches that makes all the kids pray before every game and before every practice.
The statistics came out that there's 70% of the people in the state of Georgia that are lost. 70%. There's over 10 million people in the state of Georgia. That means there's 7 million people lost. And you want to hear it in Baptist terms, 7 million people that are lost are dying and on their way to hell.
Okay, so 70% of Georgia's population is going to hell.
I like how it uses the term lost.
Uh-huh.
Like people who... people who choose to be lost aren't lost. Running away. Anyway.
Now, okay, let's look at the actual religious demographics for the state of Georgia.
Because those are publicly available.
79% of the state of Georgia is Christian.
Okay. Well, that doesn't add up.
38% are evangelical Protestant.
But, all right.
So that still doesn't explain it. 21% are Baptist. 6% are non-denominational. Okay, so now we're up to 27% that are saved. 4% are Pentecostal. Okay, that's it. Everybody else is going to hell.
Yes.
This is somebody who went to the Georgia House of Representatives and not only did a sectarian Christian prayer, but a sectarian evangelical and very specific kind of evangelical invocation.
Yeah.
Saying that if you aren't Baptist, Pentecostal, or pretty damn close, you're going to hell.
Yep. And it's his job to save them.
So apparently everybody who is different kind of evangelical Protestant is to hell.
Which is how what they believe.
Everybody who's mainline Protestant is going to hell. There's 12%. Everybody who's historically black Protestant, that's 17%. Oh, wait. No, I think I got the statistic. Black Protestant Baptist is 11%. White Baptist is 21%. And this is as of 2014. So, okay, you go a little bit further in time. He's saying that only Baptists are going to heaven.
Okay. That's what people tend to believe, though, right? That it's only the people in their church that are going to heaven. They're the only one right ones. But to go to that government and do an invocation to representatives of people from all over the state and telling them that your constituents are going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
This is why invocation shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I would say the only thing worse than that would be attacking somebody who's there in the chambers.
Which, okay, even in this case, he was telling the members of the Georgia House of Representatives, if you aren't Baptist, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
And there are people in the Georgia House of Representatives who are not Baptist.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
He was specifically calling out people in the room. That is absurd that this was allowed.
But that's the law, right? If you're going to allow any kind of invocation, you better let it be open to anybody.
Yeah.
Including these crazy people who think that everyone, except for their very close-knit neighborhood church, are going to burn in hell.
Yeah.
Oh. It sucks. It should be just done. They should just be done with it, but...
But they aren't, and they won't be.
Nope.
And, you know, one of the things I kind of hope is with... Yeah, this was definitely the big hope with the Greece versus Galloway ruling, which allowed open sectarian invocations. One of the big hopes with that was that when everybody sees what very sectarian invocations look like, they will get rid of them. We haven't seen much of that. There have been a few cases where Satanists have gotten them shut down. But we haven't seen a whole lot of
Satanists
that.
Satanists of Georgia. Time to step it up.
Because telling, at a bare minimum, this a major minority of the state House of Representatives that they're going to burn in hell. That's bad.
That's not nice.
Okay, so now we have the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, where State Representative Stephanie Borowitz referenced Jesus 13 times in her invocation. God. 13
This is like a total recall body count.
All of this was immediately before the next item of business, which was the swearing in of Movita Johnson Harrell, the first Muslim woman to serve in the Pennsylvania House.
That's not cool. That is so, that should be. Actually, you said somebody did object midway through the invocation, right?
There were objections.
That woman should lose her job.
All right, so let's listen to
some
of it.
I wish you could lose jobs like that. Ugh, whatever.
Let's listen to some of it. It's a minute and a half long. I'm not going to subject you to the whole thing. Here's some of the worst bits.
God, forgive us. Jesus, we've lost sight of you. We've forgotten you, God, in our country. And we're asking you to forgive us, Jesus. Jesus, you are our only hope. Thank you that Jesus, that we're blessed because we stand by Israel and we ask for the peace of Jerusalem as your word says, God.
So let me translate that. Jesus, Jesus, fuck the Muslims. Jesus, Jesus, fuck the Muslims.
Jesus, Jesus, fuck anybody who's not Jesus-worshipping Christian.
Oh.
But specifically.
This one was very specifically because when you include, you know, thank you for blessing us for supporting Israel. That's Jews are okay. So it's just fuck the Muslims.
True. This is true.
When it's yay Jesus, yay Israel, that means fuck Muslims. All right before the swearing in of a Muslim.
Yeah.
Okay. So in case you don't fully comprehend how much she was wanting to emphasize Jesus, 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 let's listen to the close.
I claim all these things in the powerful, mighty name of Jesus, the one who, at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess, Jesus, that you are Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus.
Yep. That should be considered verbal harassment, and she should lose her job. It's so weird, because Pennsylvania flies under the radar for me.
Yeah.
I don't think of Pennsylvania as being this area of hotbed issues, and yet they're always popping up in the freaking news.
It has a nickname.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania.
Oh.
Because there's Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and then there's the rest of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
This is a state where they were able to successfully gerrymander a swing state to sending 13 out of its 16 members of the U.S. House of Representatives, getting them all to be Republican.
I'm really hoping we're going to hear some good news on that front here within the next year or two.
They have new maps.
Yeah, but gerrymandering in general.
Yeah.
They say that, yeah, gerrymandering happens, and it's only a few extreme cases that make it look bad, but more and more, it's like, what was it? The one most recent one in the courts was North Carolina? Massachusetts.
Maryland. Maryland was the most recent one.
Maryland was, and, these guys are standing there like, no, do you not see what's happened? Even if we had 70% of the population vote D, it's still all going to go to R. That's
now,
just
Maryland's was specifically a state that leans like 55 or 60% Democrat, having a supermajority in the legislature.
Yeah,
because they basically made all the Republicans not matter.
Yeah. Okay, so we got it on both sides.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make that like it was.
There is one good example of it on the Democrat side, and there are lots of examples of it on the Republican side.
The Republicans have definitely used it to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're in there and they get access to the maps, they can basically do whatever they want.
You know, it even
Democrats haven't done that as much, and I'm afraid that this is going to turn into one of those wars where every single time the legislatures flip if they can, flip parties, that they're just going to abuse that power, spend all their time redrawing maps mm-hmm. to guarantee their reelection, and then not do what they're supposed to do, which is help people.
Yeah. You know, we even see it in Idaho.
Oh, absolutely. Why is Boise like right down the middle, right through frickin' the North End liberal hotspot?
Cole Road is the district boundary between Idaho's two congressional districts. Cole Road separates West Boise from downtown and most of the bench.
And North End.
And the North End, yeah.
Which is the famous blue spot.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, there's no reason for that. Nope. Now, I can kind of understand wanting to split up the main population of a low populous state to try and get a more fair, but this was not done in that way. This was definitely done to advance.
Right. You know, like, realistically, they could pull off.
Because you wouldn't want one district to be, have the major city, and then the other district be the rest of the state.
You should.
Always being overrun by the city people. The city people always seem to have the stronger.
When they have the population, they do.
Mm.
Look at Oregon.
Yeah.
Portland controls the state.
Yeah. And
Portland has most of the state's population in its metro area.
That's true. Yeah.
Literally a majority of the state's population is in the Portland metro.
Have you seen the rest of the state?
It's all mountains and desert.
And jackrabbits.
So many jackrabbits. And, you know, in Idaho, it would be pretty easy at this point to split the population evenly with the Treasure Valley and probably throw in Owyhee County to make a nice clean line in one district and the rest of the state being the other district.
So at least then everybody else in the state has a voice.
You give the rural people a seat in the House and you give the urban population a seat in the House.
Yeah, that does seem more.
That would be more fair.
More fair than. It's really not a very good system.
No, it's not. It's a horrible system.
Yeah, you shouldn't be able to edit it every time you. Because, I mean, these redistricting comes up all the time.
Oh, it's every decade.
And that's.
It has to happen every decade because populations change.
Yeah.
Demographics change. We're in a major period of urbanization. And we have been seeing for, well, basically ever, populations tending to move west. So states have to lose seats so that other states can gain seats or maybe add some seats to Congress, but that hasn't happened in a long time.
Yeah.
They just keep redividing.
Montana is maybe going to get.
Montana really should.
I think Montana is slate. Idaho missed it by just a little bit.
It's not decided yet.
Oh, I thought, that was preliminary.
Yeah, this is all just reporting. People speculating.
Oh.
Because all of this is based off of the census results. Would you have an actual count of the population?
Which we don't have.
That's next year. And then Congress.
Ooh, I wonder what will be. Anyway.
Which state gets to count us?
Yeah.
Foreshadowing for when I can say something. Something to say.
If we have something to say.
Yeah. Oh.
Anyway.
Fingers crossed. All right, we now have Kylie with us, so we'll see how this goes.
Hello.
And
just cheesy poofs.
I'm pretty sure we covered this next one in 2014 when Brunei announced revisions to their penal code that would make amputation the punishment for robbery and stoning the punishment for gay sex.
Ugh, stoning, seriously.
Stone to death.
That's medieval.
Yeah. So after much international objection to this, they put the changes on hold. So that was good. People were thinking that this would be good. They, in that same year, signed the Human Rights Convention, you know, against torture. Stoning and amputation are considered torture. So this was all looking good. They were also encouraged very strongly to run this one by the UN. To which the answer would have been no. But they didn't. And have discreetly announced on their attorney general's website that these are all going into effect on April 3.
So it's been on limbo for years, and then just all of a sudden, going into effect.
Yep.
Damn.
Now.
Wow.
The day after this episode is released, gay sex can get you stoned to death in Brunei. Now, most people probably don't know where Brunei is or what it is, but it's a small little kingdom on the island of Borneo that is one of the most conservative Muslim countries in the world.
And where is Borneo?
Most of Borneo is part of Indonesia.
Okay. Okay, okay. I got it. Mental map.
All right, so now we got a couple Facebook stories.
Ooh.
So, Facebook's targeted advertising allows for targeting down actually to the point of a specific individual.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy.
Very creepy. And you can do that by phone number or just put in enough demographic details that you can get it down to an individual if you want. But it also allows you to target particular racial groups, religions, people either with or without children. You can target people by age, etc.
This makes sense. You don't want to advertise women's shoes to a 13-year-old boy.
Right. And you're not going to want to target... it doesn't make much sense to target baby products to people who don't have children.
Yeah.
Or people who have children and have had them for a long time. And if, say, you've got a group like Black non-believers, you're probably not going to be wanting to waste your advertising money showing ads about it to white people.
Mm-hmm.
That all makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, people have been taking advantage of this with housing.
Right, because there's a huge rental market on Facebook now.
Oh, yeah. Renting and homes for sale. So... this has allowed, like in some cases, targeting advertisements specifically to white Christians with children.
Aw, little whitesome dislightsome.
I wouldn't be surprised if some of it has been targeting specifically white Mormons with children.
That's a little more specific, but...
you can be as specific as you want.
But can be, yeah.
And so in response to... and this hasn't just been one or two cases. This has been many, 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 many cases.
People are jerks.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has filed charges against Facebook over this, and the platform has announced that they will not be allowing the targeted advertisement of housing anymore.
Yay! God. That's one of those ones where they probably should have figured on that. It's like, oh, nobody's going to use this to be racist. Oh, wait.
Now,
all of Facebook is used to be racist.
What was disappointing was we actually got a comment on the Facebook page about this article of shouldn't private companies be allowed to do whatever they want?
Not when they break the law.
To a certain extent. But when it comes to housing, absolutely not. There are very, very firm rules in place to protect housing because if you restrict who can buy a house, you can potentially, if everybody agrees to that, prevent somebody from living in your town.
That's exactly what this is for. It's to keep white neighborhoods white,
mm-hmm.
keep black people out or Hispanics out or people who don't make enough money. It's that whitesome delightsome. It's that suburbia, American dream.
It's redlining all over again.
Yes, and redlining is something that not a lot of millennial or understand,
at least white millennials
don't understand. So yeah, before you make a comment about private companies being able to do whatever they want, look up and see what happened when they were.
Black people just couldn't
same
buy
argument
houses.
With environmental pollution, destruction of private businesses. Well, shouldn't private business be allowed to dump their waste everywhere? It was like, well, take a look at those pictures of the 70s before the EPA was around.
Right, and like with that one, there's even would be a great argument of shouldn't the people in a city have a right to weigh in on what's in their water and what's in their air? Companies don't own the air and they don't own the water.
Of course, that's off topic.
That's off topic. This is specifically, yeah, targeted advertising.
Housing, it's a very sensitive issue. It's been a problem for as long as America has been a country. So, yeah, just because you've never seen it because you grew up in a really white town doesn't mean it doesn't happen everywhere and that there aren't victims.
And targeted advertising in and of itself is incredibly disturbing. There are cases where it can be used for good by allowing startup companies and nonprofit organizations to be able to specifically get the most effective reach for their ads. That is nice. But when it can be used for social engineering and for manipulating people beyond conventional advertising, that gets kind of creepy.
Yeah, well, you've probably suffered from that when Facebook admitted that they were doing
psychological experiments
on people, and you were one of the rare ones that instead of just getting angry and posting different, you know, or reposting things, you just quit Facebook for a while. But they weren't betting on that.
Or
they used that data.
They probably did. They probably found there's a certain number of people that if you push them to a certain point, they just shut it down. And I would open up Facebook and I'd scroll until I was angry and then I would stop. And at its worst point, during the time period where that study was happening, 5 to 10 posts was all it would take for me to be angry enough to close Facebook. Yeah.
Not good for the platform, that's for sure.
No. And there actually is some good news from Facebook. They have decided they are going to be prohibiting white nationalism and white separatism.
Yay! God, I hate that term, separatist. Of course, I don't like nationalists either. It's just racism. But yeah. I worked with a guy when I worked at Best Buy who was like, well, I guess you could describe me best as a separatist. And it confused me because I thought a separatist was somebody in the South Civil War who wanted to...
Secessionist.
I got confused with that. I'm like, well, what does that mean? I looked it up and I was horrified at what I saw. I'm like, so every time a brown person walks into the store and walks into your department, that's why you disappear.
Yeah.
Because you refuse to serve those people. What an ass.
Yeah,
Kylie, I know. Sorry, that was a bad word. Did mommy say word ass? Those are actually two good stories for Facebook because not allowing targets in housing is a good thing. The fact that it was happening, not really surprising.
But waiting until they get charges from the federal government, that's a little too late.
Probably hundreds of thousands of complaints.
Right. They should have dealt with this before they were told by the Department of Housing and Urban Development that they have to.
Yeah.
We have some good news. Senator Cory Booker is running for president, and CNN is apparently giving every candidate a town hall.
Oh.
In it, he was asked about religion, and here was his response.
So I just want to say up front that I'm a person that often says that before you tell me about your religion, show it to me in how you treat other people. I was raised in a church where my mom taught Sunday school, and I'll never forget learning that verse that faith without works is dead. And I'll tell you what, I feel like I'm in church right now. And I'll tell you what, this is what often bothers. I would rather hang out with a nice atheist than a mean Christian any day of the week.
Yeah, that's pretty perfect. I would say going that much into religion, he probably could have passed on it, but he is somebody who has openly talked about his faith. So that would have been going, kind of contrary to his character. But he'd rather hang out with a nice atheist than a mean Christian. That's cool.
That is cool. That's pretty nice. Pretty nice way of putting it.
There, you could try to argue with that, but don't. Yeah. He threw us a bone. Just take it.
Yeah. That's true. If you don't think he'll make a good president, that's okay.
Uh-huh.
But at least, that particular sentiment is not expressed very often. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome.
Uh-huh. All right. We have some feedback from Randy LaMonda, @RandyLaMonda on Twitter. We got At Atheist Nomads, think I could handle a Woo conspiracy theorist interview. Just sat through an episode of Hashtag Be Reasonable with at Mr. M. Marsh and didn't kill myself, LOL. Now, I tried listening to Be Reasonable a while back.
Is that one of your podcasts that lasted less than one episode?
I think I listened to two episodes that I didn't make it all the way through.
Ah.
Because I can't handle listening to that much bullshit. I also, as a general rule of thumb, do not like giving bad ideas a platform.
Yeah, but then you're acting as the idea censor god. But
yes,
this is
because
your
I
podcast.
Own this platform.
Yep. That's something that people need to realize is that, you know, he can do that.
I
know,
own this, the feed. I control not, what goes on the feed.
He's not the government. But there's the question of whether or not expressing other ideas is, you know, it makes for a more robust listening experience. And then there's the, does Dustin want to spend his afternoon pandering to that? And the answer was no.
Or arguing with it.
And this is not a debate show.
And there's also just the feel of the show. This show is not that. Be Reasonable is that.
Okay.
Specifically, it is that. Be Reasonable is specifically let the crazy talk because the crazy is evident in the crazy. So he just asks lots of questions out of genuine curiosity. That's not what I do.
Yeah.
And
although it does sound like a good show.
It's a really nice premise. I just can't handle listening to that much bullshit.
Fair enough. You have a threshold.
And if I were to do a podcast like that, it would be a very different podcast than this one is. And it would be argumentative. And I would have to...
That would be stressful.
Get some practice in adversarial interviews. And that's because that's not a skill that I've developed. And that is a very different skill set than friendly interviews.
Yeah.
And on the support front, Rachel B. upgraded her patron level.
Oh.
So thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
And if you want to support the show, you can find out how at atheistnomads.com/donate. We've got nice big buttons to make it real easy to get to where you want to go for that. Whether you want to support us on a per episode basis or one time.
Yeah. Okay. You should probably say this at the beginning of the episode, too.
Actions don't happen at the beginning, but sometimes they do.
Because a lot of people, yeah, by the time feedback hits, they skip.
Mm-hmm.
Middle of the show. There we go.
And don't forget that episode 100 is coming.
Not-
Whoa, 300. Episode 300 is coming up live.
So fast!
April 20.
All right. 420. Yo.
Yeah. It'll be starting at noon Mountain. It'll be going for 5 hours. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be drunk.
Check it out. It'll be fun.
All right.
Lauren, thank you for joining me for most of the episode.
Thank you. Thank you.
And listeners, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.